This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 24th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Fort Smith Chorale will perform its 32nd annual spring concert, Easter Messiah, tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. This concert will be held at the First Baptist Church in Fort Smith and will highlight guest soloists Dr. Catherine White, Dr. Edward White, and Barry Law. Tickets will be available at the door. Details are available on the web at fortsmithchorale.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Tom Vilsack, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, visits the University of Arkansas. Plus, a sixth member joins the Northwest Arkansas Education Consortium. The Arkansas Legislature wraps up, the Bentonville Farmers Market prepares to open for the season, and more.
First, the state will now seek federal approval for its plan to use money intended for Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act to buy private health insurance for the state's working poor after Governor Mike Beebe signed the bill into law yesterday. The Supreme Court had deemed Medicaid expansion under the law optional. That left many states with the task of deciding whether to accept the funding. At a signing ceremony yesterday, the governor said the state is better off.
This is a victory for all of Arkansas, in my opinion. And no one person or one group of people deserve all the credit for this.
Governor Beebe told a large crowd of supporters of the plan that it took hard work from Republican and Democratic legislators alike to get it passed. The plan required a 75% supermajority in both the House and Senate. The state will have a budget for the fiscal year of July 1, 2013 through June 30, 2014, once Governor Mike Beebe signs the legislation. Both the House and Senate passed each other's identical versions of the bill yesterday, giving the budget its final legislative approval.
Anyone else wish to vote or change your vote? Seeing none, cast the ballot. A vote of 28 yeas, 6 nays. These bills have passed.
The budget includes 2% cost of living raises for state employees and increases the state's education and Medicaid programs. The state's total budget will be $4.9 billion.
Yesterday, the Northwest Arkansas Council hosted the Connect Northwest Arkansas Summit. The Walmart-sponsored event had the mission of developing a strategy for making sure immigrants to the area are connected. Leaders of thought and politics, decision makers, and nonprofit executives gathered to discuss where we are as a region and to make sure immigrants feel connected and at home in the area. Mike Malone is president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council.
We've had a fast-growing immigrant community, and by immigrants it could be folks that moved to our area from other regions of Northwest or other regions of the United States. It could be immigrants that were foreign-born. It could even be folks from other parts of Arkansas that chose to call Northwest Arkansas home. We need them all. We need them all plugged in. We need them all contributing economically. And we want them to stay. And so it's really to build the plan for how to better connect with our new friends and neighbors.
Malone says on a personal level, it's heartbreaking to see families come and go in the region. And he says while the transience disrupts lives, it's also tough on the local economy.
For our businesses and our organizations, that creates additional costs for them and difficulty when folks just cycle through like a revolving door. So we've got to do a better job of keeping folks that move in and getting them connected in. And we've got to do it for business purposes and economic reasons as well.
The overall goal of yesterday's summit was to develop tactics as well as an awareness program about area opportunities and assets in an effort to engage with the immigrant population.
Dozens of people gathered yesterday near the intersection of Fayetteville's Maple Street and Garland Avenue to protest a proposed hog breeding farm in Mount Judy in Newton County. The protest was staged by opponents of the C&H Hog Farm. Former Fayetteville Mayor Dan Coody was among the protesters. He says the main aim of the protest yesterday was to promote awareness of the situation.
To let people know what's going on and what's at risk. And Secretary of Agriculture Vilsack is here today, and we want him to be aware of some of his agency's involvement in allowing this confined animal feeding operation to be built, probably with very lax and loose standards that with scrutiny probably wouldn't have passed.
Secretary Vilsack says before a loan guarantee could be issued to the hog farm, an environmental assessment had to be completed, and that assessment has been reviewed by the USDA's federal and regional offices. He says while people can call environmental assessments into question, there are things that hog farms can do to mitigate concerns about watershed pollution.
I think there are strategies that a hog production facility can implement that would potentially reduce the concerns that folks may have. I know that this is an issue that we dealt with in my home state when I was governor. And as a state senator, there are buffer strips that can be created. There are ways in which you can use the environment and the natural resources to provide protection. There are also ways in which waste can be contained in a way that minimizes the risk.
We'll have more about Secretary Vilsack's visit to Fayetteville in a few minutes.
Students at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith will host a memorial run Monday for the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing. The event is being organized by members of the student chapter of the American Society of Mechanical Engineers. Cassandra Bright is vice chair of the chapter, and she says much of what the organization does involves outreach in the community.
And that Boston bombing really shook not just Boston, but everybody in America. So we decided the best way for Fort Smith to deal with this and show our support for Boston, but also for runners everywhere, was to schedule an event to show that we're not afraid to run together and we have that unity, and also to try to raise some money for the families that lost family members, friends, the runners that can't run, and then also everybody that was at the event.
The event is sponsored by both the ASME chapter and the Western Arkansas Runners Organization, but Bright says the benefit run has been well received by the community.
We've gotten a lot of feedback from the emergency medical services in Fort Smith. They've offered to donate their time for this as well. We have a lot of people just wanting to come out and run. We're currently trying to get a few things as far as door prizes. Plato's Closet from Fort Smith has gotten involved, so that there will be a few fun items that get handed out. But again, the main purpose of this is to raise awareness and, you know, bring the people of Fort Smith together, but then also get the money to the people in Boston.
The run will take place at 6 p.m. on the UAFS campus, and runners will run from the bell tower, circling the campus block three times, and then back to the tower. There is no entry fee, but donations are requested, 100% of which will go to the One Fund Boston, a relief organization set up by Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick and Boston Mayor Tom Marino.
Tonight, patchy frost after 4 a.m., a low of 28 in northwest Arkansas, mostly clear and a low of 37 tonight for much of the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, patchy frost in the early morning. Highs will be in the mid-60s tomorrow afternoon in northwest Arkansas, around 70 for the Arkansas River Valley. And for tomorrow night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms developing after midnight, lows in the mid to upper 40s.
Yesterday, the School of Law and Dale Bumpers College of Agriculture hosted the second Dale and Betty Bumpers Distinguished Lecture at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Tom Vilsack, Secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, was the featured speaker, and as Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis reports, his lecture focused on policy priorities to protect the nation's agricultural future.
Shortly after noon yesterday, the sound of protest punctuated the air outside the School of Law at the University of Arkansas, while inside people began to file into the E.J. Ball courtroom for the Dale and Betty Bumpers Distinguished Lecture. U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack addressed a full house of students and other guests on perceived short, medium, and long-term threats to the nation's food and economic security. In the short term, Secretary Vilsack advocated for comprehensive immigration reform, stating that immigrant workers do much of the nation's food harvesting and production, and that many of those workers are undocumented.
We've had a broken immigration system for years, and it now threatens the survival of agriculture, because we simply don't have enough people to harvest. We don't have enough people to pick the fruit and the vegetables that are being grown, and literally today we have food rotting because we simply don't have the workforce.
He says that for it to help farming in the U.S., immigration reform would have to include provisions specifically tailored to the needs of agriculture.
Providing a pathway to citizenship for those who have been here and worked here and have struggled here for long periods of time, and complement that with a guest worker system that ensures that we have adequate work supply and workforce for all of the important work that agriculture does.
Vilsack says that if immigration reform isn't undertaken, then like other sectors of the U.S. economy, the agribusiness sector could begin outsourcing production to other countries with a more available workforce. Outsourcing food production could impact both the nation's food and economic security. However, addressing immigration reform for agriculture would only account for part of the labor force needed to sustain the country's stability in both areas. Vilsack stated that an aging farm population threatens the medium-term viability of the country's agricultural complex. Speaking to the students in attendance, many of whom were students of the Bumpers College of Agriculture, Vilsack stated that there are more farmers and rural residents over the age of 65 than there are 35 and younger. But much of that lies in the younger generations being enticed to better economic opportunities away from farming.
We've got to be able to make the case to young people that there's opportunity here. Now, the vehicle for doing that is a five-year farm bill. To set up a beginning farmer program that provides the technical assistance and the credit that young people need to get into business.
Some of those tools to get started include microloan programs to entice people to start farming operations of any size. But another key component of a farm bill would be a strong safety net.
Mother Nature can play tricks on us, so we need a strong safety net, with crop insurance being the key component of that safety net. There is diversity in crops, and so the safety net has to be structured in such a way that it responds to the unique challenges of a rice or cotton producer versus someone who's growing corn or soybeans or somebody who's a specialty crop producer.
But balancing a diversity of crops is but one balance, Vilsack says, is necessary for a strong safety net for producers. He says that to make crop insurance work, it requires a fair balance between contributions from taxpayers, insurance companies, and farmers. He said that another necessary component of a farm bill would be a provision to expand market opportunities for farmers. Since 2008, the U.S. has had record years of agricultural exports and record levels of farm income. Vilsack says that that trend needs to continue.
To do that, you need a farm bill that promotes trade, that allows us to have the tools to encourage trade shows and reverse trade shows and opportunities for us to help small and medium-sized businesses do the job of promoting American agriculture overseas.
Also of importance for the farm bill would be a greater commitment to agricultural research. Vilsack said that competitive grant programs have helped the USDA leverage research dollars farther with current federal budgetary constraints. But much research in recent years has been focused on nutrition and battling the nation's obesity epidemic, with fewer research dollars to go elsewhere.
The last 2 years, we've been trying to build the case to the president and to Congress about the importance of continued investment in research. That case was not being effectively made for an extended period of time, and we had flatlined our research budget. And the result is that there is a corresponding potential reduction in the productivity of American agriculture. There's a good correlation between research and productivity. So we wanted to make the case that, hey, you got to pay attention to this just in the same way you've paid attention to healthcare.
The message must have been heard, because Vilsack reassured the future agri researchers in the audience that they could expect a greater emphasis on research in general in coming years. One area of expanded research could be in forest, soil, and water conservation. With more research, Vilsack says that quantifying the economic and environmental benefits of conservation would not only create new opportunities for private investments in conservation, but it would also help support a provision in the Farm Bill for expanding conservation efforts elsewhere. One such area of expanding conservation could be through a connection to the lucrative outdoor recreation industry.
You see, outdoor recreation is a $656 billion industry annually. We spend a lot of money to hunt, to fish, and to hike, and to bike. And conservation creates the landscapes and the wildlife that allows us to do more of that. So we need a farm bill that creates a commitment to conservation, that creates fewer programs so it's not so doggone complex, and allows us the flexibility to tailor conservation to the unique aspects of landscape.
All of this talk of conservation leads into what Secretary Vilsack deemed a long-term threat to American agriculture. With the past few years full of floods, drought, hurricanes in the Northeast, and stronger tornadoes all around, he said that more attention must be paid now to the issue of climate change so the future safety of agriculture in the country can be secured.
We just recently concluded an assessment, and if we don't develop mitigation and adaptation strategies, it is not unlikely that what we grow and what we raise today in certain parts of the country will simply not be allowed to do that because Mother Nature won't let us do it 30, 40, 50 years from now.
In a way similar to the way current federal research dollars are leveraged, farmers in the future will have to be able to produce more food with less of everything. Vilsack says that the necessary research should begin now in different areas to deal with a variety of constrained resource concerns.
Where we have new water management strategies that recognizes we're going to be in shortages in some parts of the country in terms of critical water resources. We need to develop the seed technology that allows us to grow food even when there's hardly a drop of rain. We need to create ways in which we can mitigate the consequences of pests and invasive diseases and so forth that are a result of a warming climate. We need to do this research now.
On top of that, he says farmers will need to know how to use the land more efficiently and more effectively. But one of the overall messages that Vilsack stressed in his lecture was that greater efforts need to be made to foster open communication in order to secure the future of agriculture in America.
Doesn't mean that you have to check your passions, doesn't mean you have to check your views or your principles, but you do have to work because this country works best not on either extreme, in my view. This country works best when we empower the moderate middle, and that moderate middle says to the extremes, you know what, you guys can fuss and fight all you want, but this country's going to move forward because we're going to make a deal and a decision on comprehensive immigration reform. We're going to get to a five-year farm program and balanced nutrition and farm programs. We're going to figure out, we can fuss about what causes climate change, but the reality is we better be prepared for it, because if we're not, we could lose something very valuable in this country. And we cannot afford the luxury of talking past each other.
But getting that open conversation to happen could well depend upon many of the people who were in attendance at the lecture, some of the nation's future agricultural producers, researchers, and lawyers. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas Education Consortium is a year-old organization focused on improving college graduation and retention rates. One method is to provide a platform for college dropouts to go back to school through Graduate NWA. The consortium's five original members are John Brown University, Northwest Arkansas Community College, Northwest Technical Institute, the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, and the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences in Fayetteville. Yesterday, the consortium welcomed a sixth member, the University of Arkansas Fort Smith. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas attended the formal announcement, and she has this report.
Mike Malone is president and CEO of the Northwest Arkansas Council. He served as master of ceremonies for yesterday's announcement. He began by saying this is the first official partnership between the Northwest Arkansas Council and the newly formed Fort Smith Regional Council. The partnership connects Northwest Arkansas with the River Valley to form one region of sorts, a Western Arkansas. The goal is to create economic opportunity so that residents and businesses can prosper. Part of that is a well-trained workforce. The Council's focus on infrastructure issues, including human and intellectual infrastructure. Reed Greenwood is director of the Northwest Arkansas Education Consortium. He spoke on how the councils and the consortium are working together through Graduate NWA, a website and system to assist residents in re-enrolling in one of their institutions and completing a degree.
In short, we're determined to help more people achieve a degree or a technical certification. As we know, a better educated workforce is going to have a tremendous impact on our area, and it will also allow us to attract new higher paying jobs to our communities. With that background, I want to invite Chancellor Barron to come and join me here at the podium.
Dr. Paul Barron is Chancellor of the University of Arkansas Fort Smith.
The members of the Northwest Arkansas Education Consortium believe we can make even greater gains by working together on projects of mutual interest. So it became clear to us after meeting with you and others representing the University of Arkansas Fort Smith that UFS can and should be the sixth member of our consortium. So I'm asking you, on behalf of the members of our consortium, to become a part of our NAEC and join us in working together to benefit Northwest and Western Arkansas. Will you join us?
We certainly will.
Thank you so much.
Happy to be with you.
Happy to have you as a full partner.
Thank you.
Barron says the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, or UAFS, is honored and thrilled about the opportunity to stretch the consortium's purpose. He cites U.S. Census Bureau statistics that state there are more than 19,000 people older than 25 that have started college but not achieved their degree in Sebastian County. 54,000 in Benton and Washington counties combined are in similar situations. And these people have more than just a few credits. Many have close to 90 hours and could graduate in 1 year as a full-time student. And they're in good standing. These residents considered higher education important because they started, but they had to stop for whatever reason. Family, health, life.
To those former students in particular, I'm asking you to strongly consider returning to UAFS or one of our new partner universities to complete your education. The truth is, Arkansas needs successful students as much as the students need colleges and universities. However, if they don't come to UAFS, we do want to ensure that our residents do pursue a degree or technical certification, whether that's at the University of Arkansas, in Fayetteville, at John Brown University, or one of our other new partners. An educated workforce is of great value to a community, and it lifts up our region when a person advances their own personal education.
Barron goes on to cite a UAFS study. Of the 7,337 enrolled students, the average age is 24.3, with 1,000 between 30 to 44 years. It's decreasing as more are coming to UAFS right out of high school. Keep in mind, the school started out as West Ark Community College and didn't join the University of Arkansas system until 2002.
That's not to say that we have old students. Because from where I sit, we don't have old students, we have returning students. Anybody who decides to come back from where I sit is young in mind, and that's who we need. Those statistics show we're providing service to people who didn't immediately go to college, and if there's an opportunity to break through the walls that prevent some from going to school and finishing degrees, we want to be part of that.
One of the beautiful things about the partnerships and the consortium is if a Fort Smith resident would better benefit from Northwest Technical Institute in Springdale, UAFS will help get them there. Barron says the affiliation with the five other institutions will benefit UAFS because they'll get students that really need to be there, with the regional community being the ultimate benefactor.
Our mission statement is stated that we prepare students to succeed in an ever-changing global world while advancing economic development and quality of place. Any program such as the consortium that sets out to increase educational attainment of the community and aims to make regions of Arkansas more attractive to expanding or relocating companies, we want to be involved in that. That's part of our mission statement.
Yesterday's program concluded with a public service announcement with Phil Jones of Knappholz Construction. He's a spokesperson for Graduate NWA. Jones finished his undergrad in 2002 at the age of 45. He finished his MBA 3 years ago. He went to college after high school, but dropped out after three semesters.
Really, it's never too late, and even at my age, me finishing school gave me options I wouldn't have had ordinarily. I had a good job with a very large global company. A year after I finished college, the company I worked for sold the division that I worked in. So the things I was working for as benefits and retirement packages, went out the window. So I had the degree, so I had options to go do something else. So it gave me opportunities I wouldn't have had ordinarily. It's never too late. Actually, I doubled my salary since I finished college, which is an important factor given that I had two daughters, had to pay for their college, weddings, and so on. So, again, really a life-changing experience for me.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
It's Wednesday, April 23rd, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Again, channeling Kevin Kinder, our music writer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a band called Besnard Lakes. I have no idea what they are, except they're Canadian, they're alt rockers, and they're on tour coming to Fayetteville tonight. They will be at the Light Bulb Club. I used to be able to think and talk. Starting at 9 o'clock, and admission is $8. And some Thursday things, because there's a raft of them. You know, Thursday is the new Friday.
Of course.
There's an art talk at 1 o'clock at Crystal Bridges, Views on the Boldness of Prince. An author talk. I really need to give up today. An author talk with Lissa Brown at 3 o'clock at the Bella Vista Library. Another one with Lee Wardlow, the author of Me Plus Math Equals Headache. Amen. At 6 o'clock at the Rogers Public Library. The Civil War Roundtable meets tonight, or Thursday night rather, at 7 o'clock at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale. And you can catch Next to Normal. The show currently playing at Theater Squared in Fayetteville tomorrow night at 7:30. Jazz Night at UAFS at 2nd Street in Fort Smith. The UAFS Jazz Band and Jazz Cats at 7:30 tomorrow night. It's free. And there's a student comedy competition at 8 o'clock tomorrow night at the Arkansas Union Theater at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. And it is also
free.
Exactly.
Wow.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. Compassion is much easier to define than to measure. We know that compassion is an understanding of a problem coupled with a desire to alleviate the problem. But can we determine if a business, school, or city is becoming more compassionate? A group in Fayetteville wants to work toward making the city more compassionate. Compassion Fayetteville has met once in each of the last 2 months at the public library and will do so again Saturday. Patty Williams is one of the coordinators of the meetings.
This is a little different than an ordinary citizen action group because as people have come, we have offered on all occasions, including the third one, a personal reflection.
The two-hour sessions are open to the public, and Patty Williams says the idea is to have participants examine what they consider proper undertakings to make the city more compassionate.
Either for themselves or for people in our community, or globally. So that's one thing that we really wanted to say is that we're going inside. And then we're moving from that out into dreaming and into action.
This local ambition is rooted in a global effort called the Charter for Compassion, a document urging people and religions to embrace compassionate activities and attitudes. Margot Jackson, another organizer of Compassion Fayetteville, says that charter has turned into something of a nonprofit cottage industry, spawning an organization called Compassionate Action Network International.
There's less than 10 cities in the United States right now that are official cities of compassion. Fayetteville is a candidate city. And then there's other cities throughout the world that are also compassionate cities. And so it's a network of cities that can kind of, we're exploring more ways of trying to network and learn from other cities and what they're doing.
Among those cities, Louisville, Seattle, and Appleton, Wisconsin. The city councils there have signed the Charter of Compassion. Fayetteville is a candidate city. Developing a wish to become a more compassionate city does not instantly make a city more compassionate. So how do aspirations evolve into actions?
Good question.
At the first two sessions this winter, a loose list of suggestions of what could be done to make a more compassionate Fayetteville was created by the participants. Patty Williams calls these suggestions dreams, and they range from the very broad idea of be more open-minded to the much more specific be more aware of the difficulties that exist in transportation for people with disabilities. Saturday's third and final session in this first phase of the exercise will allow for more comments. Those bits of a framework will then be molded into a one-year plan.
We're going to put together a central organizing group of volunteers who will come together and take a look at the dreams, take a look at what's already going on, and then shape a one-year action plan, which includes getting one of the first steps is to get the city council to sign the charter. Mm-hmm. You can also get organizations to sign the charter and
a proclamation
from the mayor. Those are going to be first steps.
Patty and Margot say for the Compassion Fayetteville Directive to work, they need as broad a range of perspectives to be heard as possible. Again, Patty Williams.
And that's a challenge, for sure. And so when we do the action plan, part of it is going to be, how can we really reach out to Latinos? How can we really reach out to Muslims?
Margot Jackson says the first two sessions seeking input have had a good cross-representation from the city, including people of different ages, sexual orientation, backgrounds, faiths, and income levels. But she says they hope Saturday's meeting has an even wider population.
Many people who come to these events have rarely do they have an opportunity to sit face to face with someone and be listened to and be heard. And that's definitely part of what we're doing. So I think that's really important, that you can speak with other people in your community that you otherwise would not have a chance to speak with.
Margot, Patty, and others working to make Fayetteville a city of compassion obviously believe such conversations can make a difference. Patty Williams says she thinks just the act of listening, really listening, and putting aside preconceptions can assist in creating a more compassionate atmosphere.
And we've tried to share, what does it mean to really listen to another person and take your own agenda out? So in regards to, can compassion be learned? Can compassionate listening be learned? Can compassion presence be fostered? Yes, I think so. And I trust that. That's my value of why I'm here, is first we develop the awareness of the possibility, but then we really have to learn skills. We have to realize that part of it means putting our own self aside and listening and being present to that person, not arguing, not evaluating, not judging, but just being there.
The next Compassion Fayetteville meeting is scheduled to begin Saturday morning at the Fayetteville Public Library at 10:30 and last until 12:30 Saturday afternoon. Organizers stress everybody is welcome. You can learn more from the Facebook page for Fayetteville Inclusion. You can read the International Charter for Compassion at charterforcompassion.org. You can also find those links at our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
Friday night is the closing night for an art show that has been slowly building on the Fayetteville Square. Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson has the details.
Art has reclaimed the basement of the Bank of America building on the Fayetteville downtown square thanks to the Sugar Pop-Up Gallery. That's the gallery run by students at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. The Sugar Gallery focuses on student work and is operated by students. That would be Cambry Pierce Duprier Newton and Laura Pulaski, both grad students in the art department at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. As Laura explains, they recently lost their long-term space in Bentonville and are operating as a pop-up gallery.
Sugar is functioned as a pop-up gallery at this point. They used to have a permanent space in Bentonville and will eventually have a permanent space in Fayetteville off of 6th Street. But right now, each month we have to find a different location to host our shows. And most of the exhibits center around student work. Sometimes it's printmaking, sometimes it's architecture. We also work with landscape and interior design, but mostly in the fine arts realm.
The opening reception for the Sugar Pop-Up Gallery in the Bank of America basement took place on First Thursday, that's April 4th. It featured work from Emily Chase, Melissa Love, and Jean Vothrock, as Cambria explains.
Well, right now we have three BFA honors students who are graduating this May. They have their thesis exhibitions up at this time. They're currently the only ones down there, but by April 26th, there should be about 25 students down there.
Throughout the month, sculpture students and the grad students will be installing their work. So every day, a little more work will enter the space. The reception on the 26th will be the culmination of the month of work. Emily Chase is down in the center of the gallery in the outside. She's showing paper dresses. And Emily just received the Wingate Scholarship, which is a really big honor. Her dresses incorporate a lot of different things besides paper, and she's able to achieve these finishes in her work that would make you not think that it was paper. It looks like leather, vinyl, and they're very intricate and beautiful. Melissa Love works with sculpture, and she's playing with the idea of work and play and adolescence and adulthood and where the fun goes when we grow up. And Jean Vockroth is a Katrina survivor, and her work revolves around the idea and the experience of having gone through the Katrina hurricane.
Another student featured in the pop-up gallery is John McDaniel, a second year going up for his candidacy as a painter.
Right now I'm working on 5 large-scale paintings that will be dealing with very formal issues of painting. I'm interested in the exploration of color, the exploration of space, and the exploration of unity. So my paintings right now deal a lot with those general ideas, as well as dealing with memory and the concept of having a place in the world. So that's kind of the direction my work's headed in going into candidacy.
Cambry and Laura also have work going up in the Sugar Pop-Up Gallery.
I will be showing a series of video projects that I created myself as a protagonist. These videos are about quite a few different things. Desperation, longing, love, assumed identity, and gender roles, and all kind of through this, like, YouTube lens.
I will be showing sculptures. They will be maybe a little bizarre and a little out of the realm of what you might expect to see, dealing with the overwhelmingness of our experiences and the chaos of day-to-day life. Old underground space is, it used to be studio space for the artists that were part of it. And so it's a little makeshift. There's paint splattered on the floors and makeshift walls put up. So it's an alternative space, which is great to give students the freedom to experiment in their work. And it's not so rigid. But then we also have, you know, very formal spaces in the middle, glassed areas. So there's a variety of spaces, and each student got to go through and pick where they wanted to show, which would best suit their work. It's a really good space.
It is. It's a really amazing space to have the opportunity to show in because of the facts that Laura were talking about. It is alternative, but there is also kind of a gallery sense when you first enter the space. And then the space opens up into all these smaller, different venues that really can work, especially for installation work. So it should be a really interesting space for people to come and check out on the 26th.
As John mentioned, the closing reception for the Sugar Pop-Up Gallery at E Square Plaza is Friday, April 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. The gallery is open prior to the closing reception. Those hours for Wednesday are 1:30 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. and then Thursday, Friday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
Legislators have a few weeks before they come back to officially wrap up this latest General Assembly session, but yesterday was likely the last day of business for Arkansas lawmakers as they approved the budget and Governor Mike Beebe signed into law a health insurance expansion that many lawmakers agree was the biggest issue of the session. Nathan Vandiver from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock has more.
Social issues dominated the beginning of the legislative session, indicating Republicans and Democrats might have trouble reaching agreement. That was not the case toward the end, as lawmakers tackled Medicaid expansion and economic incentives for a billion-dollar steel mill. Speaker of the House Republican Davey Carter said accomplishing those issues and tax cuts was quite a feat.
Any one of those things by itself is a huge deal. And for this body to tackle all three of those things in one session, I think's pretty remarkable.
Senate President Pro Tem Michael Lamoureux, a Republican, says Medicaid expansion through the private option is indeed the biggest issue lawmakers tackled.
Because it's so broad, because it's so new, first in the country to be like this, and because the potential of not doing something was so substantial.
However, Medicaid expansion did show a possible split in the Republican Party. Some, like Lamoureux, saw the plan as a solution to a problem, while others saw it as an endorsement of the federal health care law.
I think we owe an accounting of ourselves to those that are disappointed. I mean, we came down here, there's a lot of people that sent us down here that, I'm not saying they don't understand what we did, but they're waiting to hear what we did. But in terms of factions, I don't think so.
So Lamoureux says it's time for lawmakers to explain their decisions to their constituents.
I do think, you know, we've come down here, we've served for 100 days, we've passed a lot of laws, and we need to go home and explain ourselves and stand before our communities and see if they approve of what we did. It's hard for them just to read the newspaper or read an internet site and find out what we did in, 5,000 votes.
Senator Keith Ingram, a Democrat from West Memphis, agreed that Medicaid expansion was the big issue and that the parties worked together to make it happen.
We have now 250,000 Arkansans that are going to have health care insurance that didn't before. I think that we demonstrated, quite honestly, the country that two parties can work together for the benefit of the people. I think that's the story of this session.
Back on the House side, Representative Joe Jett, a Democrat, said the deal lawmakers reached on Medicaid showed bipartisan effort.
By and large, I think the two-party system is good for the state of Arkansas. It gives good balance. There's some good people on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, and a lot of good people worked together this session. I was proud of that.
Though lawmakers adjourned Tuesday, they can meet again before May 17th for several reasons, one of which is to override a veto. That's now a possibility after Governor Mike Beebe issued three vetoes on bills that would make changes to the state's election commission. As of last night, it was unclear whether lawmakers will make the trip back to Little Rock for the override. In Little Rock, I'm Nathan Vandiver.
This is Ozarks at Large. Friday and Saturday nights, more than 20 poets will read from their work at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. The readings are called an Ozark Small Press Poetry Festival and include poets traveling from around the country as well as poets who live here. This week, we're hearing from some of them. Sarah Nicholson is one of the poets scheduled to read. She was born in New York City and grew up in New Jersey. Now, she's in Northwest Arkansas. She says she began writing poetry at a later age than many of her contemporaries.
I was older than most people. I was about 20 years old. I've started writing poems for all the wrong reasons. My friend was doing this summer, taking the summer class in Iowa, and I wanted to go with her, but I didn't have any poems or write poems. So I wrote a bunch of poems and sent it to that. And there was also going on at the same time this around campus, I saw this this ad for win $100 for the poetry contest. So I wrote a whole group of poems, sent it to both, and ended up going to a summer class with $100. And I've been writing poems ever since. Yeah, it's pretty much the only money I've ever made from poems. It's a poem called De Orbe Novo. The title is taken from the title of a book by Peter Martyr d'Anguilera, and it's one of the first works of, I guess, for lack of a better term, European American literature. It was, I believe, the very first thing that was written after Columbus's voyage, and it's all about, you know, the conquest and about the Native American cultures that they encountered there, and it's a really interesting work. There's this beautiful image in it of the soldiers in Columbus's army had killed a bunch of these doves to eat for their dinner, and but then when they were eating the doves, they noticed that they were really fragrant, and so when they finally cut them open, cut their stomachs open, they found that they were all full of flowers. These doves had just been consuming these tropical flowers, and that image kind of stuck in my head when I was writing this poem. So, De Orbe Novo. The composition of the woods turns away from music. Yet here again, we must translate it back into speech. Vaguely, the dead grass is of the imagination, and books come from the water of the newer world. Evening crawled from the bright path to the woods. You crawled through my hair. My only friends went to the forest and built a house as prolegomena to the trees around them. You opened the book and found that it was full of flowers. I opened the book and it ruined this pocket of sun. The wine walks next to me. The notebook holds my hand. Too bad I hate this place, full of animals like me who bury themselves in me. The black cloud is really a shadow of a heart grown Latinate. De Orbe Novo, De Orbe Novo, the wheel of the earth is painted on thy ring.
Sarah Nicholson will be one of the more than 20 poets participating in a weekend poetry festival at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. The readings are Friday and Saturday nights from 7 until 10 and are free. You can learn more at burningchair.blogspot.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me, as he is most Wednesdays, is Daniel Hintz, who is Executive Director of Downtown Bentonville Incorporated. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
Very good. Thank you. And along with us is Nikki McNally, who is the Farmers Market Manager for Bentonville.
Yes, that's correct.
And you're opening up Saturday.
I am. April 27th. We'll be open from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Is there a certain excitement that comes with the opening?
Oh, yes. Very much excitement is going around. We have new T-shirts, three new designs. We will have new food trailer vendors. Crepes Paulette is leaving the market. They will be in their permanent location, two blocks north of the square on A Street. They will be open during Saturday market, but it's two blocks north of the square on A Street. Our two new food trailers are Yiyos Mexican Grill. The Rios family runs the trailer, and they've been vendors with us at the farmers market for several years now. They will be sourcing ingredients from the market, and they will be creating salsa from vegetables out of their garden.
Wait, so they'll be getting, they'll be shopping themselves at the market, then creating the salsa there.
Correct.
So you'll have Saturday salsa right there. Wow.
As well as a lot of their other product as well. They're going to do as much locally sourcing as possible.
And then we also have Kind Kitchen. They focus on vegan and gluten-free items. They'll have baked goods. And then they also have a couple of new secret menu items they're rolling out. And you'll have to be at the opening day of the market to find out what they are.
Secret menu items.
Yes.
That's right.
There's a tree giveaway happening at 9 o'clock at Ernie Lawrence Plaza. Farmer and the Markets will be playing. They're always an exciting, fun band to watch. As always, we are a producer-only market, so everything is made or grown by the person selling it to you. And our chef demos will be starting the following weekend, the first Saturday in May, and the chef demos are by Chef Rob Nelson at Tuscan Trotter. They're also a sponsor of the Farmers Market. And we'll be having chef demos the first and third Saturday. And I also want to say thanks to Arvest because they're a huge supporter and sponsor of the market as well.
And Daniel, if I know you, you have other things going around the market besides just the market.
Well, absolutely. Understanding that the farmers market really is the foundation of so much of what we're doing up there on the culinary side of things. We have so many restaurant partners that are excited that the market's starting up again because they're able to jump back into the locally sourcing that they do and try to do through the winter season as well. But you know, when you start tying our first Fridays in, our first Friday festivals are now able to be 2 days. Now that we have the market, the big art and culinary festival in June, we incorporate the market into so much of what we do. So really great food starts at the farmers market, no matter where you are in Northwest Arkansas. Wonderful markets all over the place. So we're really, really excited to get this cornerstone event up and running in downtown.
You mentioned it's a cornerstone, but there are other things surrounding it?
Oh, absolutely. Well, obviously, there's the art museum that we have in downtown Monroe, Krista Bridges. And there's a whole buildup that they're doing leading up to May 1st Friday, which is in the next couple weeks, and partnering with the launch of the Walton Arts Center's Regional Arts Festival, Artisphere.
Right.
You can go check out two different artists at Krista Bridges in the next couple weeks. On April 28th is Celeste Roberge, who is has a sculpture installed on the Krista Bridges Trail. And you can talk with her on April 28th. And the second artist is artist Leo Villarreal, whose illuminated buckyball is getting ready to debut on Krista Bridges grounds. And he'll be giving a talk on Wednesday evening on May 1st. And he's getting a lot of attention because of his Bay Lights project in San Francisco.
Lit up the Bay Bridge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you get to actually meet this guy locally in the downtown area over at Krista Bridges. And you can actually find out some more information on all those events at KristaBridges.org or just give their office a call, 479-418-5700.
He'll be in town for a few days, too, for that installation.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe so. But as you talk about all of these events that are going on, once again, kind of going back to that food piece, we have a program in downtown Bentonville called Backstage Downtown, which is really sort of a pairing, if you will, of both food and music, kind of overall experience, really great for people that love to explore food. On Cinco de Mayo, we're partnering with Table Mesa, Bentonville, and supported by David and Janine Freedy. And they're helping us sort of produce this really cool event at Cinco de Mayo. With Cinco de Mayo at Table Mesa, where the tickets are $25 for downtown Bentonville members, $35 for non-members. And we have music by the Latin duo Danubio that's going to be coming down. And through the whole night, you get a wide variety of tastings. They're going to be bringing out passed around beverages, hors d'oeuvres, everything ranging from hummus and their world-famous cheap dates, if you've been to the one here in Fayetteville or the one up in Bentonville. But we're also doing mini lobster tacos, mini duck confit tacos, fish kebabs, portobello fries. And then in the evening, about 7 o'clock, they're going to bring out the tres leche, chocolate tres leche, mini carrot cakes. So it is a culinary exploration along with filling your ears with great, great music. And that will be on Sunday, May 5th. And you can give our office a call at 254-0254 if you guys want to buy tickets.
Okay. So on May 5th, on regular
May 5th,
Cinco,
on
de
Cinco de Mayo. That's correct.
Right. And the first market is Saturday.
That's correct.
Nikki, what's the favorite thing for you to get at the market? Is that a fair question?
I guess it could be a fair question. I love the cheese, local cheese. We have goat cheese and then cow cheese as well, and I cannot get enough of cheese curds from Loma Dairy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cheese curds, and they squeak. That's how you can tell a fresh cheese curd when it squeaks.
See, I don't know if you're pulling my leg here.
No. Being a Wisconsinite, that is one of the cardinal rules of cheese curds, is that if they're fresh, when you bite into them, they squeak.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
There you go.
See, you learn something every day. Daniel, Nikki, thank you both very much.
Thanks,
Kyle.
Thank
you.
The president mourns victims in West Texas. In Washington, both sides look for lessons after the gun bill goes down in Congress. Montana Democrat Max Baucus announces his retirement, and the Boston bombing reverberates through the immigration debate. I'm Jennifer Ludden. It's Political Junkie Day. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
KUAF is supported by Ozark Natural Foods, Northwest Arkansas's consumer-owned food co-op since 1971, offering local organic produce and all-natural groceries, bulk foods, health and wellness products, and a full-service deli. Ozark Natural Foods is located in the Evelyn Hills Shopping Center or on the web at ozarknaturalfoods.com. Walton Art Center's Artisphere, Arkansas's Arts and Nature Festival, begins in May and runs through June. Events include the new gallery exhibit Untamed, the Trail Mix Concert Tour on Saturday, May 4th, Jamie Stone's Room of Wonders at Thorn Crown Chapel in Eureka Springs on May 6th, and Boats, a Play for Children on May 11th. An event schedule, tickets, and more information available at artisphearfestival.org.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Urbanette.
Where is that?
Urbanette is in Carroll County. It is, as the crow flies, due east of Eureka Springs. But if you're going to drive there, go to Berryville and travel north on Highway 21.
Excellent.
Yes.
Have to visit there sometime.
There's not a lot in Urbanette.
Well,
but it's worth seeing. It's pretty country.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let's see. Tomorrow, the University of Arkansas Tuba and Euphonium Quartets have a performance at 6.
Yes.
And the UA Horn Choir has a performance at 7:30.
In the same place, right?
Yes. Both concerts are at Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus. Both are free and open to the public.
Also tomorrow night, it's the Big Picture House, this group in Fayetteville that's trying to get cinema more part of the art scene.
Sure.
They are having a continuation of their Read It, Watch It Club adaptation, which stars Nicolas Cage, directed by Spike Jonze.
Oh, I didn't realize he directed that.
Yep.
Okay.
And it is sort of an interpretation of the book The Orchid Thief, and it shows how you make a movie when the star of the story is a flower. It's a movie that's also kind of about writer's block. It's a different kind of story. The movie is tomorrow night at 7:30 in the Breezeway behind Nightbird Books in downtown Fayetteville.
Awesome. And we'll know the recipients of the annual Grit Awards by the end of tomorrow night.
Yes.
The Fort Smith Convention and Visitors Bureau will announce the annual 2013 Grit, which is Giving Recognition in Tourism Awards, tomorrow night.
And I also want to remind you that you could pick up a free tree Saturday morning in Bentonville, downtown Bentonville. The Tree and Landscape Advisory Committee is giving away trees, 150 of them. You do have to be able to prove that you are a resident of Bentonville. You and I cannot go get a tree. They will start giving them away at 9, and it will last until the trees are all gone.
Excellent. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening, and have a happy Wednesday.